Howdy everyone and welcome to Risky Business 2. I'm Patrick Gray. Risky Business 2 is hosted by Vigabyte Virtual Hosting and sponsored by Symantec. And this podcast right here is a ripper. It's a presentation by Andre Barisani and Daniele Bianco, whose names I'm sure I just massacred with my unsophisticated Australian tongue. Risky Business 2 correspondent Paul Craig was in Hawaii last month for the Shaka Khan Security Conference, and he recorded this talk, which looks at side-channel attacks using optical sampling of mechanical energy emissions and power line leakage. Now, what does that mean? It means hackers with freaking laser beams on their freaking heads is what it means. These guys have developed techniques for sniffing keystrokes out of power lines and via laser microphones, you know, the ones on their freaking heads. It's really cool. Anyway, I'll leave you now to enjoy this presentation by Andre and Daniele. And again, boys, sorry for getting the names wrong, but I've just got no hope. And when you're done listening to this, you can download an interview Paul Craig did with these guys about their talk. It's all on Risky Business 2. If you're not subscribed, go to risky.biz/feeds and get cracking. So here it is. Here's their talk from ShakaCon. Enjoy.
So we're going to talk about two unconventional attacks. So the first one is against wired PS2 keyboards using the power line leakage detection. And the second attack is using optical sampling of mechanical energy against laptop keyboards. Okay, so we cover these two areas. Why bother? So we deal with software every day, with bugs in software. We do security auditing for a living. But hardware hacking is so fun, that's what we do for our talks because it's really, really nice. If you haven't played with hardware, I mean, you should do it. It's very rewarding. We're talking about two unconventional side-channel attacks, which are side-channel attacks are always very interesting. We use relatively cheap hardware, so we're not going to show you something that costs thousands of dollars. Freaking laser beams. We use laser beams. Come on, how cool is that? So what is Tempest? Tempest means, well, it's an acronym that can have many different meanings. So transmitted electromagnetic pulse energy standards and testing, or tiny electromagnetic particles emitting secret things, or the emissions might produce extremely sweet talks like this one. It concerns the investigation and studies of compromising emanations or fortuitous leakage from devices, like some kind of leakage that you wouldn't expect. Okay, so we're not talking about hacking I have an exploit, I'm hacking the SSH daemon of a box because I want that information. We're talking about something which is a side channel, something that you really wouldn't anticipate. And the term was coined in the 60s or 70s because, some big government agency wanted to, test and protect from these kind of things. So there's lots of public research relevant to attack one. Okay, Tempest has been, around for lots of years. The main targets were CRT and LCD displays. Okay, you can eavesdrop CRT and also LCD displays from distance. LCD displays are even easier than CRT, surprisingly. There's also a paper which is going to be released in August by two Swiss guys about compromising radiation emanations of wired keyboards. They've been doing this work at the same time where we were doing our work, and it's very interesting because we're attacking the same thing in two different ways, and we're kind of proving each other's point, which is kind of cool. And their paper is going to be released in August, and it's going to be awesome. We're talking with them; they're great guys, so you should look forward for that. So, what's the theory about the first attack? So, PS2 keyboards have lots of wires in it. We have the data, we have the voltage, we have the clock, and we have the ground cable. Okay. So what's going on there? So the wires within the cable are very close to each other, okay? And specifically, the data cable is very close to the ground wire cable. So what happens is we get some interference going from the data cable to the ground wire cable, okay? And the ground wire cable is connected to the main power cable of your PC, which goes into the power plug, okay? So there's a direct connection between that. Everything that has a ground in your PC eventually goes into the ground wire for your power adapter cable. And so the theory is that the information about the keystrokes leaks to the electric grid. It can be detected on that same power plug, including nearby ones sharing the same electric line. Okay. And the clock frequency of the PS2 signal is lower than any other component or signal emanated from the PC. so we can distinguish that frequency from pretty much everything else. That's the key, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to do this kind of work. So we want to isolate the leakage by filtering out the signal from the noise, which means profit, which means growth. Okay, that's very important. Keep that in mind. Okay, that's the driving force of the entire talk. So there is some documentation suggesting the possibility of this attack. And again, the Swiss guy also suggested that the shared ground may act as an antenna and significantly improve the range of their attack. Okay, and so what we prove is that you can actually get things from the ground. And you know, of course, your usual black ops government agency. Of course, they might have tried these kind of things already, and we will never know. But if two idiots can do this with like $30, hey, just give me $10,000. Imagine what we can do. Yes, you are an idiot. Shut up. So the PS2 signal, so the data is transmitted one byte at a time. It's a serial protocol, okay, which is good for us. Each byte is sent in a frame consisting of 11, 12 bits. And this is an example of the letter B. Oh, let me take my laser pointer. Freaking laser beams. For enhancing the presentation, let me test it. Okay, good. It works. So, as you can see, this is a square wave of a key, okay? This is letter B, for instance. And the clock frequency range is between 10 and 17.7 kilohertz, okay? So it's not fixed to a precise frequency because, you know, keyboards are cheap. You cannot, you know, have a very specific frequency. But, you know, it's a range which is also going to help us, and we will see why. So this is what we do, basically. Do you want to talk? Because I'm enjoying this. Do you want to say something? Come on.
So, yeah. This is the sniffing circuit. It sounds a little weird to have two ground in the same circuit. But, you know, they are two different objects. The first one is the building ground. And the other one is a clean reference ground, and in order to be able to sniff the leakage into the ground, the ground line, we have to put a probe resistor and to measure with an ADC to measure the differential of potential at the ends of this resistor.
Okay, so. Go away. So, yeah, the important thing is we need a different ground for our equipment, okay? Because as we're trying to detect a leakage on the building ground, we cannot measure the different of potential using that same ground, because otherwise we wouldn't see anything. So we need a different one. And so we use a digital oscilloscope for our initial test. And so what we do, we route the ground from a nearby power socket to our ADC, and we do a measurement, okay, using the reference ground. Nearby power socket refers to anything connected to the same electric line, okay? So it can be in the other room, it can be 30 meters from you, okay? Which is, you know, sweet. This is the evil power cable, which, of course, it's evil because this is a European power plug, which is evil, you know, by design, because it's much different than yours. So you can see that we have, you know, the power, and we have this big thing. This is the ground, okay, which I take it's not very popular to have the ground here in the States, but it is required by law in every power adapter around Europe, okay? So what we do, we take out the wires, so don't touch these two. This is the power. Never touch them, okay? Be smart. And this is the ground wire, the one which is yellow and green. It's a ground wire, so we attach our probe here, and we plug this into the power plug, being very careful not to touch this one, okay? Otherwise, it would be a very, very evil cable. So this is the reference ground, which is a sink, and toilets are perfect. So it's very, very classy thing, okay? So the clean ground is actually dirty, but it's good enough for us. And if you are in a hotel room, there's always a toilet, so it's excellent. So the reason why this works is because these tubes are like the internet tubes. They go directly into the ground, okay? So it's fine. It's very good as a ground. It's from an electrical point of view, it's very clean. From a, you know, sanitation point of view, it's not. But, you know, it works for our purpose. So the testing lab, so we tested this in a nuclear physics laboratory with dozens of devices going on. So the point about this is that the ground there was possibly was extremely noisy. It is the worst ground you can ever get into a building, okay? Also because you would expect that, you know, physicists, they do things very, you know, hey, this is my equipment, this is very precise, it's not going to leak anything because I need to do very precise measurements. Far from it. It was madness. I mean, there was more noise on the ground than the actual, you know, power wires. Anyway, and it was a complex electric grid topology, okay? So the point is that if it works here, it would work pretty much everywhere else, unless you have some really weird stuff going on. Like if you try this, you know, on your home or on an office building, the ground will be much cleaner than this one, and you will see how noisy the ground was here. So sniffing the signal. So this is what you get when you attach the probe to the ground. You know, looks like nothing. It's, you know, really, really high noise. So we need to filter the noise. So remember, I told you that PS2 has a range. So what we do, we use... Do you want to talk again? Come on.
Okay. So we use the finite impulse response filter. Basically, it's a bandpass filter. And of course, our window is between 1 and 20 kilohertz, because we want to look in that frequency window. We saw that during our experiments that sampling rate around 1 mega sample per second is good enough, and even 100 kilo sample per second is a sufficient rate. Here there is a C-Lab example, but in order to create the finite impulse response filter, but yeah, you can use whatever you want, Octave, MATLAB, there are a lot of scientific tools in order to do that.
So this is a clear signal. This is taken directly from the keyboard, just for showing you what the filtered signal will look like. So we got our nice square wave here, and this is the filtered one. This is actually the zoom of this area. So you can see there are some artifacts which are introduced by, you know, the math algorithm working here. So these are unavoidable, of course. You cannot get the same thing with the filter. But so basically this is what we're looking for. This is like the converted square wave by the filter, and this is the clear signal, okay? So results, so again, this is noisy ground, okay? So we want to test if our theory is sound, and here's what happens. So this is a keystrokes going on. You can see from here that something is happening. You can roughly see it, but of course you cannot tell for sure. This is the filter signal, and if we zoom, we can see a way which is very similar to the one I showed you before, which was the clean one. So this is our actual square wave being sniffed on a power plug, which was 20 meters away from our target. So this is the wave, and this is the overlay of the letter. So this is letter A. And this is the time where the audience should say, oh my God, and cheer up, because we got the information from the power plug, okay? Yeah, come on. Would you ever expect to find something like that on the power line? I don't think so. Well, I mean, it was very surprising for us that, you know, it worked. We said, oh my God, it works. We're not too, you know, we're not so dumb after all. But, you know, we're getting there. Anyway, so this is letter A. This is a different measurement on a different time of the day. So you can see that the noise was different because, of course, also depending on the time, the noise was different on the ground because some equipments were going off at some specific time. And again, we can see that this actually here is another letter A here. This is another one. You can see here. This is a letter B. And I can show you the C, the D, the E, the F, and the G, but you know that would be kind of pointless. So you can see, you can get the entire keyboard from the power line, and so some considerations here. So there is, of course, some attenuation going on the wire. Of course, the longer the distance where you're sniffing, the more weak the signal is going to be. We didn't see any significant difference between 1.5 meters and 50 meters, okay? The thing is that the frequency is very low, which is good. It means that the signal can survive through, you know, meters and meters of cable. But, you know, be careful that the output power of this is very, very tiny. We're talking about the order of the picowatt, okay? So it's, you know, a very, very weak signal, but still you can make it out. And, you know, estimating a typical copper cable attenuation coefficient of 0.1 decibel after 60 meters, it means that, you know, 50% of the signal survives after 60 meters, okay? And, you know, do we have a typo in the slides? The one I told you about and you said no, the guy from the audience was wrong. Oh, come on, you should listen to the audience, man. Okay, you're fired. So what we're working on right now is doing this thing with continuous sniffing, because having $3,000 oscilloscope for doing this is not really cheap. So what we're doing right now is we're programming an ADC, an Atmel. You want to talk again? Come on.
I have to talk only during the boring slides, yeah.
That's why I pay you.
Yeah, we will probably use a microcontroller. We are working with an Atmel, an AtXMega. It's a new micro. Oh, no, I haven't. Yeah. It's a new microcontroller from Atmel. It's very interesting device because it has two very fast ADC into the microcontroller, and it allows you to sampling at 1 megasample per second, so it's a good sampling rate for our purposes. Of course, after the sampling work of the signal, we have to filter it and post-processing analysis and blah, blah, blah. And of course, we will storage our sampling sequence into a storage. Probably we'll use an SD card or something like that. And it will cost about $150, so it's good.
Okay. Yes, and it's very easy to use SD cards on this controller because they already support the protocol for writing on it, so it's very easy to do a continuous dump of data over there, and they have enough power for doing the processing we need, which is good. So we just convert whatever we do with the oscilloscope on, you know, on a very cheap scale with the microcontroller. So as I said, depending on the sensitivity of the equipment, keystrokes can be probed, you know, in the nearby room or even farther. We guess that if you're a government agency and you have lots of money to spend on this, you can go beyond 60 meters. Of course, you can also tamper the power plug with the sniffing version, but it's not really interesting because if you can put something in the room, you might as well put a camera or whatever, or more advanced equipment for sniffing the keystrokes. So appealing targets are ATM machines because, at least in Italy and in some part of Europe, most ATM machines are just Windows XP PCs with a standard keypad, which uses PS2. So the thing is that if you have one ATM in a public ATM and you have a shop nearby, the electric line it's really likely to be the same. So you can just put your device in the nearby shop and you can get PIN number. And of course, the fact that you know that you're only looking for numbers narrows down the processing that you need to do because you know you're only looking for numbers. So that's one appealing target. Again, we're very confident that with more expensive equipment, you can have really precise measurements. Again, if two idiots can do this with $30, then, you know, and probably, you know, anyone can do it. The data is there. That's the point we want to try to make. The data is definitely leaking to the power line, and it can be, you know, measured. So this doesn't work where we're kind of testing this, but in theory, it shouldn't work with USB keyboards because USB keyboards, they use differential signaling. So the thing is that USB keyboards, the microcontroller on the USB keyboard is so noisy by itself because it needs to do more processing power that it might do some kind of other leakage, and so we need to test that theory. And of course, there might be other factors responsible for the signal interference. Like it could be also the power drain from the microcontroller rather than the interference from the data cable to the ground cable. It's very difficult to estimate what is exactly responsible for the interference. But we did some tests, and we think that in major part, it is the actual interference from the ground cable. But anyway, you don't care. I mean, the signal is there. You really don't care why it is there. The important thing is that it's there. The attack from the Swiss guy, they use antennas from detecting the actual keystrokes, okay? So they don't do it over a wire, they do it over the air, okay? But it's basically the same thing. Like, the ground cable, it is our antenna, okay? They just do it over the air. So we think our attack eventually will have more range. And, you know, they kind of have to do the same, you know, filtering and processing. But, you know, we're talking, and I think we'll work together on future projects. It would be very awesome to do something like that. So, workarounds. Of course, you can cover yourself in Teamfall, and you will look like a dork, but, you know, again, who would be so stupid to cover themselves in Teamfall? No, I don't want. But there's no electrical activity in your brain, so what's the point of shielding it, right? Okay, anyway. So, but again, you will look like a dork if you do that, so it's not really practical. Anyway, so enough with that. Attack number two. So attack number two against laptops. So there's some public research relevant to attack number two, which is keyboard acoustic emanations analysis. And those are two awesome talks. You should really, awesome papers. You should really read them because they're really, really wonderful. And we're going to say how those two talks are interact with our research. We cannot use the previous attack on laptops. We need to use something different. So we know that previous research addressed keyboard acoustic. And we know that you can use laser microphones for monitoring sounds at a great distance. So the theory is, why not pointing the laser microphone at the laptop itself? So not pointing it at a window for detecting the sound, but pointing it on a laptop to sample the vibrations. I mean, why can, you know, we can try to do that. So laser microphone assembly. So you can see we have the equipment there. So it's very, very, very cheap. So you need one laser, one photoresistor or photodiode, some battery, universal power adapter, JEP cable, two tripods, and a laptop with a sound card. And for, you know, if you want some options, you can get a focusing lens for long distances or an amplifier, optical bandpass filter, black tape. You know, you can spend as much as you want for the laser microphone, but we just, you know, $70, you can get a very effective, cheap one, okay? The more money you throw at the laser or at the design, the better is going to be the range. So this is the laser. It's a class 3 laser. It's very cheap. It's slightly better than a laser pointer, okay? The advantage of taking a commercial laser is that you can turn it on and off without having to press on it. So it's very good if you want to assemble it. Can you show the actual box? So a very cheap one is good for like 15, 30 meters, okay? If you spend like, you know, $200 for the laser, you're going to get, you know, longer range, okay? But, you know, if you want to do like 15, 30 meters, you can spend $30, $20 on it, and it's just fine. You can even use a laser pointer if you don't want to spend any money. You just need to figure out how to keep it pressed all the time. The photo detector, they cost like $1 or 50 cents each. They're very easy to get. We can have different types. So this, the photodiode is actually works better because it has a faster response, correct me if I'm wrong. This one works as well, but it's kind of a slower one. But, you know, you can buy a bunch of them and then try with different versions. So this is the diagram of what we do. So basically, we have our laser pointed at the laptop. We catch the reflection of the laser back on our receiving diode. And the circuit is very, can you show it? It's very, very simple. We just have the battery, we have a resistor, and we directly input the signal on the audio jack of the laptop, okay? This setup is exactly the same thing that you would use for actually detecting the voice. So we're pointing it at a laptop here, but if you point this exact same thing at a window, you can hear the voice of the people talking in the room because the room vibrates and the vibration, of course, it's, you know, the sound hitting the window. So by catching the tiny movement of the laser beam back and converting those vibrations into sound, you can actually hear what's going on. So the device, which is here, and of course, later if you want to see it, we can show you, I mean, we can show you the evil power cable, all the device we have, just ask for it. So this is the actual, oh, it's very, very dark, but anyway. So do you see these two points here? There are two tiny, okay, that's the reflection. So usually you get a dispersion pattern, okay? So it's not that you get one red dot by the reflection, but you get more of them. You can use, you know, some might think that you need to use the strongest one. No, you actually need to use the weakest one because, so keep in mind that these devices are so sensitive that you really need to, you know, the resistor, and you need to take, you know, if you have a bright red dot from the laser, you need to point your diode on the weak part of on the outer part of the circle, okay? Because otherwise you get too much noise because it's very, very sensitive. This is when on during daylight, okay? At night it works just fine. So in order to test the device, we first try with audio, okay? So that's a very good test. Because you know you can use your brain instead of using some math, and you can if you hear the sound and it's decent enough for hearing making out the words, then it generally means that it's going to be good enough for taking the vibration from the laser. So we had good results below 30 meters without any hardcore tuning at all. If you want to do longer distances, you need to tune your resistor. Again, if you use a circuit with a variable resistor, that's the best thing you can do. You can do optical filtering if you want. So it requires a bit of, you know, more work. But, you know, it's pretty easy to do. It just takes some time, but then, you know, it works. So there are some commercial laser microphones available. They cost like $20,000. I mean, of course, they're ready. But, you know, really, if you want to, you can spend, you know, 5% of that amount of money and get something which works great. So just, you know, I can let you hear an audio clip for a voice test. Without any tuning, okay? So I'm saying this is a test with our laser microphone, okay? So you can make out the words. And this was without no tuning. Like, okay, assemble, point it to the window, got it,
yeah,
okay?
Without, so amplification.
Without any amplification at all, without any equalization of the sound. That was the raw sound taken from the microphone, okay? And that works. So, of course, you can spend time and you can tune in, you can have, you know, better sound, but this is really good enough. Full screen mode, where is it? Window, yes, there it is, okay. So, keystroke detection. So, what we do, we aim the beam directly at the laptop case, generally the LCD lid, okay? At the LCD display lid. Because what happens is that if we aim at the top, we catch more resonant vibrations from the keyboard. If you aim closer to, do you have your laptop here?
Yep.
Yeah. So, if you aim closer to the keyboard, so, right here, it's not going to work that well. If you aim here, you're going to get a better result. Of course, this highly depends on the laptop you're using, okay? But what you can do, worst case, I mean, you can use more than one laser microphone. You can point two, three, four of them, and you can point them at different spots, and then you can correlate the data, okay? So if you're advanced, you can do that. This is a sample data from words being typed. So, the key here in the analysis is that you can make out the spacebar immediately because the spacebar is such a different key from anything else on your laptop that it stands out. And that's very important because it means you can distinguish the words, which is very important for the kind of analysis we're going to do. And you can see these are the different keys being typed. And this is a different test from a different laptop. Again, you see that the wave is different because depending on how the laptop is constructed, the wave is going to be different. But you can still see that the spacebar here is very, very... Who's using a laser beam? Anyway. So audio clip, it has no relevance, but just for letting you know what you will hear if you pipe that data on your speakers... This is slowed down, by the way. It's like a heartbeat. Those are the keys being pressed. Okay. So what you can do while you're sniffing with the laser microphone, and you can point the laser, you can use your headphones for trying to understand if you have a good audio or not. Okay. So if you hear the sound, then you're good. And so what happens is that you can play Wheel of Fortune. We can play Wheel of Fortune now. So you get, these are the different waves from the different keys. And so what you can immediately tell, just by looking at them, without doing any math analysis, you can say, oh, hey, this guy here kind of looks like this one and kind of looks like this one. You can see the shapes. They're kind of the same. Okay. So what you can do, you can try to play Wheel of Fortune and you can assign groups to the different waves. Okay. So you can say, okay, I can group these ones into... the first group, And then this one maybe belongs to the first group, and this one maybe to the second group, because you can see they're very, very similar, okay? And but what we do, so as we want to, you know, do this properly, we use a technique called dynamic time warping for measuring the similarity of the signals, okay? You want to talk again?
Another boring.
Yeah, come on.
Another boring slide for me. So yeah, we use this technique, dynamic time warping. It's a technique used in a lot of different fields. It's used in robotics for motion recognition and other stuff like that. It's used a lot in voice recognition and in speech recognition. This technique is very nice because allows you to scoring your signal and to say, okay, these two patterns are similar one to the other, and how much they are similar. Basically the technique is based on spectrogram analysis, so it uses fast Fourier transform. Basically, what we have in these slides are three different cases. In this case, we have the same signal compared to. It's self compared. So, as you can see, this red line is very straight. And this means that those signals are equal, basically. In this case, you have the same signal, but in a real case. And as you can see, the line, okay, it's a little bit. There are a few small curves, and in this case, we have the comparison between two completely different signals, and the line is the curves are. Really, really great, relevant.
The important point here is that the longest the path of this line, the less equal the signals are going to be.
Yeah,
so the fact this is straight, because they're the same signal, which means this is the shortest path from going to here, okay?
The similarity score is the length
of it's the length of the line, okay? So as the length here is, this is shorter than this path here, these two signals are more likely to be the same than these other two, okay? And the important thing, so it's called dynamic time warping because the time doesn't matter. You can have two waves which are expanded through time. So that's why it's used for speech recognition. Suppose I'm saying a word like coconuts, and I'm saying it very fast, like coconuts or coconuts. With this algorithm, you can match the words even if they're on a different time span. So that's why it's called dynamic time warping. Everything is normalized. And that's very important for our keystrokes, because depending on where we aim or how you're typing, the vibration might be faster or slower. And that's why we need to do this kind of analysis. Okay, so these are sample scores from the example I showed you before. So we can see that these groups of characters here, the one typed in green, have a score which is much lower than the other combinations, because here we have 0.072, and here we drop to 0.167, and this is 0.066. So you can tell that there's a threshold here, okay? And we can match all different pairs and try to see. We can match all the possible combinations, trying to see which letters are going to be the same. So what we can do, we can come up with a pattern like this one, which is very similar to the one we just assigned just by looking at the letters. So we can say, okay, the first key appears to belong to the first group, like the last one and the two keys here. The second one, I have no idea. The third and the fourth letter, they're completely different from any other key. They don't belong to any group, but I know they're different. This one is group three, and so on. So you can do that kind of matching. And so these are some graphs that shows you in a graphical way the fact that these combinations are probably, you know, they're probably the same, because they're much lower than anything else here. Same here. And so what we can do, we can try to, we just made a small tool which is just uses regular expressions against the dictionary. So it's very important, you need to know the language that is being typed, Okay, so you need to know if it's German, Italian. Okay? And so let's try to pipe this input into the tool. So we get a number of combinations. And I'm going to show you this example because it's very important to understand that the context is very important. If you know the context of the word, does that mean time? So if you know if you're spying a diplomat or you know, a sports player or your ex-wife or whatever, you know that is going to type some different things. So the combinations here are going to be like Hogwarts hash, which I have no idea what it means, Salmon Sans, which is not very likely to be something that makes sense, Secret Sets, maybe, it could be, Sermon Sans, meh, Socket Sets, meh, Soviet Sets, Cold War, we're sniffing a spy here. Statues sues, well, you know, everything sues in America, but statues, come on, that's not very realistic. Straight seats, no, don't think so. Subways says, they generally don't talk that much, the subways. And Tempest Test, oh my God, could it be Tempest Test? Okay, that looks very appealing. Tidiest Test, meh, again. Tiniest Test, not sure. Trident Tent, okay. So what we see is that it's very important to understand that this was done by just typing two words. There was no previous knowledge. It was just me going on the laptop, typing two words. The laser beam was there, and I could see. And I can come on to like 12 different entries. If we add a third word here, like D-Tempest Test, we narrow down the options to two entries. One which doesn't make sense, and the other one which makes sense. So if you have a page, you know, an entire page that's been typed, it's end of the game. You get all the words. And especially if you're using the English language, like as we have the space bar and we know that you know, hey, there's a three letter words. It could either be T-H-E or A-R-E. And with that knowledge, we can use those words, you know, like Wheel of Fortune in all the other words. And that will eventually, you can do two passes and it will make sense. And of course, if you're typing a password afterwards, then we can use those keys for narrowing down the options for your password. And if you type the password before the page, we don't care because we have the entire set of data. So we don't care if you type the password before or after. As long as we have a consistent set of data with, you know, your own language being typed, then we're good. And of course, we might not get everything because your password might have symbols and stuff, but at least we can narrow down the options. And narrowing down the options, we're trying passwords in IT. You know how powerful that can be. Because even if I have 100 different possibilities, it's going to be end of the game. Hell, even if I have 1,000 possibilities, it's going to be end of the game in most cases. So you can see how this can be scary. Of course, how am I doing with time? 5 minutes, okay. So, attack scenario. So, we try different laptops. So, this is an Asus EEPC, which has a very, very nice black plastic case, which is totally reflective. So, end of the game, totally owned. The IBM ThinkPad. So, what you can use, you have your ThinkPad. You can use, on your ThinkPads, you have this antenna here, which is made of plastic, which is very, very reflective. Or you can actually use the logo itself. So, If I put, you see the reflection here? No, wait. You see it on my hand? Yeah. Okay, so that works. Apple. So we always knew that glossy was evil. So we have a security reason on why that design is an epic fail. Anyway, so you can either point at the Apple itself, or if you're sniffing from behind, then you can point at the glass, and it's totally reflective. Now, of course, you might say, hey, but if I see a red dot on the laptop, now I might think that someone is doing something like that because I've seen your awesome talk. But the thing is that you can use an infrared laser. And if you're using infrared laser, you will only be able to see it if you're using infrared goggles, which are not very comfortable for typing, okay? And so what you can do, you can aim with a real laser, with a visible laser, and then you can switch to the infrared one. Or if you're super cool, you can wear the goggles while aiming, and then, you know, it's end of the game. The transmission and the reception of the laser beam can be at two completely different locations. Okay, so if you're on the 20th floor and your laptop lid is like that, I can be on the same floor, on the opposite building. I can point the laser at your laptop. The reflection is going to be down, and then I can be my other, you know, party can be on the ground with the receiver. Okay, so you need a line of sight. Obviously, it can be on the front or on the rear of the laptop, and you just need to have the proper angle combination. And again, the more money you throw at the equipment, the better the range is going to be. Even if there's glass in the way, it's going to work because it reflects on the glass, but only 4% reflects back. So the laser can make its way on the laptop and then get back to you. It works because remember, the equipment is so sensitive that, you know, it's end of the game. It's going to work. Notes, if you change radically the typing position, of course, you will screw up every measurement, okay? So as a, you know, workaround, you can just type in a silly way from now on. If you mistype, that can be compensated with error, you know, spelling correction and so on. And again, very important thing, you can see in our in data dump that you can assess the timing of the keys very precisely, which means that all the previous research using keyboard acoustic can be applied just at a longer range. Okay, so we're not even talking about that because it's not our work, but this attack extends the range of those previous research by a lot because they were using directional microphones before, which they don't have a very, very long range. Like the laser has a much longer range. And again, this is the end, so thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the talk and the silly video. And if you have any questions, you can, if we have 1 minute for questions, or you can ask us later, we're going to be around. Yes? For no, it doesn't. It actually, so MIT did a study about tinfoil protection, and in some cases it actually enhances the signal. It acts as a repeater. So tinfoil, it's very dramatic as a, you know, as a protection, but it really doesn't work. It looks cool. It might look cool, or you can look like a dork, like the guy in the picture, but it doesn't really work. Well, it's so the government, U.S. government has some very precise specification on tempest protection, and supposedly if you build a PC with according to those specification, you will mask the signal. One thing that really works very well. So one of the reasons why it doesn't work with laptops is that on laptops you have the small turret on the cable. Yeah. You have, you know, when you see that, do you have it here? Do you have that thing? That thing blocks the signal. Again, it blocks the signal with our equipment. If you spend $20,000, I don't know. Okay? And of course, it blocks on the ground cable. It won't block it from the air. Okay? So you still need to keep that in mind. Any other questions? Yes? Yes. So, yes, you can do it because remember that the frequency wasn't very precise. It was a range. So the thing is that it's very hard to find two keyboards that emanate at the same range, at the same frequency. So what you can do, you can distinguish between the keyboards by discriminating the frequency. So that works.
Yeah, and also the fraction of the time. The
yeah, the time.
The window of the single keystroke is very...
And if
we are talking about something that is kilohertz.
So yeah, and if you're uber cool, you can also distinguish by... assessing the typing style and effectively what is being typed on. So if you know that you're going to have five people in that room, then you can assume that in your math. So, but yeah, it's easy just to do with the frequency. So it works. Any other questions? No questions at all? Did you like the video? Thank you. There's going to be a third part in our next talk, possibly with a cliffhanger. We'll see. Okay, thank you very much. And if you need any other questions, we're around. Thank you.